You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, you may have heard this piece of career advice at some point. Follow your passion. We'll hear some pushback to that idea, saying it doesn't really lead to happiness or to success. Now, the Canoe-mobile is in Milwaukee this week. It's not a giant canoe with an engine and wheels. It's a fleet of vans carrying six 10-person canoes, along with outdoor equipment, educational materials, and teachers. The program is put on by a nonprofit group called Wilderness Inquiry, and they're out on Lake Michigan to give kids a free learning experience out in nature and on the water. Tonight, they're out on Lakeshore State Park until 7 p.m. On Friday, they'll be at the Jackson Park Pond from 4 to 7. Willie Tully is the development director for Wilderness Inquiry. Willie, welcome to Central Time.
Rob, thank you. So happy to be here.
How does the Canoe-mobile program work?
Yeah, so in the physical sense, Wilderness Inquiry's Canoe-mobile is a van and a trailer and six canoes, as you said, and seven of our trained outdoor leaders who fan out across the country. We send our rig, Canoe-mobile rigs, coast to coast, and we're in Milwaukee this week. And we work with national partners and local partners to connect kids and families to educational and recreational programming on local waterways. So this week, we're bringing kids from Milwaukee out to Lakeshore State Park and Jackson Park and Lincoln Park as well to learn and paddle and explore with us and mostly to have some fun.
And that's the what. How about the why?
Yeah. So, you know, the connections to the outdoors, especially the last couple of years, have been shown to be as important as ever. Bringing people together in the outdoors, strengthening community, but also, you know, the outdoors provide so many mental and physical health benefits, support the academic well-being of students, as well as social emotional development. And so for us, it's really about, you know, how can we bring kids together? How can we connect them to supportive adults? Through recreational activities that include canoeing and exploring in local parks. So it really is a way that we can invest in the healthy development of kids and families.
I know some of the target audience here is going to be kids who have maybe never been out on a boat. Can you talk about the sort of the boot camp to get them ready and out on the water?
Absolutely. So 80% of the kids that join us to paddle have never been in a canoe. So this is a first-time experience. It can be a little bit of a scary experience. Our staff are highly trained, and safety is our number one priority. So we have all of the supportive equipment needed. Our 20-foot, 4-foot, 10-person canoes are almost untippable. We bring these big boats out.
I'd find a way, I bet. I'm not great at it.
It's a challenge. But you know, for us, it's, you know, the kids go out maybe a little bit tentative, and but we really work. We support them. We take them out. And then when they get back to land, they have big smiles and, you know, lots of high fives.
What are you hoping happens after you visit a city, say Milwaukee in this instance? What are you hoping goes on with the kids who participate and the groups you work with in the community?
That's such an awesome question. Yeah, Canoe-mobile is our program, our introductory program that we hope plants the seed for future engagement. So we also, Wilderness Inquiry has a number of programs that then builds from that initial experience. Overnight trips to local parks or extended trips to national forests and national parks. We have a base camp up in the Apostle Islands. And so we bring groups from the Milwaukee area up there to deepen that engagement and experience. And you know, that model follows what we call our pyramid of engagement, that is really about how can we invest in healthy development of kids, but then also, you know, build lifelong lovers and users of our outdoor places.
Who are the partners you're working with on this Wisconsin trip?
Yeah, so we work with both local and federal partners. So some of our funders for this are the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service. We're also working with Wisconsin DNR, Lakeshore State Park, River Edge Nature Center, Milwaukee River Keepers, as well as a number of schools and youth-serving organizations as well that help connect us to kids and families.
Now, of course, you can't make it to every community. Can you leave us with some thoughts for people, wherever they might be, to try to find opportunities like this to connect kids with the outdoors?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for those that want to follow along with the Canoe-mobile, you can go to canoemobile.org and check us out. But, you know, for us, the outdoors can be right in your backyard. We have parks, we have waterways, we have trails, and it doesn't need to mean going miles and miles from home. You can engage in nature right in your own backyard. And that's really a great starting point. And So many of the benefits that have been shown to derive from engagement in nature can happen in your backyard or can happen on an adventure a little bit further afield. So we really encourage everyone to get outside.
Willie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
That's Willie Tully, Development Director for Wilderness Inquiry, with us today to share more about an outdoor education program. It's visiting Milwaukee and Lake Michigan this week called Canoe Mobile. They'll be at Lakeshore Park tonight until 7 p.m., and they'll be at the Jackson Park Pond on Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about an Army Reserve veteran who now lives in Shawano County.
Joanne Shedler's family was fighting in wars long before the U.S. military existed. This is one reason the nurse joined the Army Reserve later in life and eventually co-founded the Mohican Veterans Group. Shedler lives in Gresham and shared her experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices initiative.
I was an older nursing student that went to Marquette University in Milwaukee. And after I graduated with my Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, a family member who is an Army recruiter talked to me and said that I could get a direct commission in the Army if I wanted to join it. I thought that was a great opportunity because of the history of my family. As a Native American, we have fought in wars since before the military, U.S. military. I was commissioned as a second lieutenant, which is the bottom ranks of officers. Our reserve unit got called to active duty. We started out at Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. We were in big barracks, and it was very dreary. And so we got a little opportunity to run into Walmart, and I bought some things to help decorate up our bathroom. The other women really appreciated that. I also am a beautician, which I did before I became a nurse, and I offered free haircuts to people because we were there after 4 months, and there was only a barber on the base. And to me, that helped with our morale. And as a leader, I think it showed that you can make the best of whatever situation you're in. I also got a tribal flag that I brought along, and I hung it outside when I got to have a little area where I did have some privacy, and that was kind of cool because it gave a lot of people an understanding that there's Native Americans that are also here. We're a whole variety of people. Parts of our unit were pulled and called up to go to Afghanistan. I volunteered to do that, but by this time I had received my promotion to major. They were looking for ICU nurses, and I was a med surge and administrator at that time. So I did not get the chance to do that, but we stayed on a few more months. And then 2004, I retired after 20 years and 6 months in the Army Reserves. So when I was back home, I became a tribal council person, a legislator for my tribe. As a veteran, I was very interested in our history. So I was a part of our historical society for our tribe. Myself and two other tribal member women who were retired Army, we started the Mohican Veterans about 17 years ago. And so we have our own Mohican Veterans organization. We're formed because we wanna recognize and be at all the funerals as honor guards. And we have an Eagle Staff, which is a memorial Eagle Staff that we've started. And my Eagle Feather, one of my Eagle Feathers that I have, when I pass on, my family can give it to our veterans. And then at my funeral, they will tie that Eagle Feather onto the staff. Our veterans group were instrumental also in putting together a veterans memorial. And in front of our clinic, we have a memorial now. And so every day we can see that there with many names that are there. So we continue to honor our veterans many ways.
That was Joanne Shedler of Gresham, Wisconsin. She shared her experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
Coming up, a sociologist shares her research on why following your passion may not be the best idea. That's up next here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, if you're in school, say, or you're starting your career or thinking of changing careers, someone maybe, probably has told you at some point to follow your passion or just do what you love. Our next guest is a sociologist who, after years of telling others to follow their passions, started to feel like that advice didn't sound quite right. Aaron Seck is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Michigan and author of the book, The Trouble with Passion, How Searching for Fulfillment at Work Fosters Inequality. Aaron, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you, as I mentioned, once dispensed this advice yourself. A lot of people have over the years. Where did this idea come from that if you're looking for work, follow your passion?
Sure. Well, it's been around for a long time. We've seen that that is an idea that people have held on to in their understanding of what good work means since at least the late 1970s, early 1980s, and has really only increased in power as we've seen people look at the labor force and say, you know what, it's not the kind of stable place that maybe my parents or my grandparents' generation had access to. Maybe I better find work that I love.
And where does that idea start to go wrong as you see it?
Right. So, I mean, we definitely don't want people being in jobs that they hate, that they want to make them want to tear their hair out on a regular basis. But the difficulty comes in two different places. One is who has access to jobs that are both aligned with their passion and also provide a decent income and are relatively stable. And what I find in my research is that the folks who can get jobs that are aligned with their passion and are stable and well-paying tend to be those who come from more well-off backgrounds in terms of socioeconomics. And they tend to have access to things that I call safety nets and springboards from their parents. Things like the ability to not have a whole lot of student loan debt or social connections they might have in an industry to get them jobs from the very beginning after graduating college. And so telling everybody that they should follow their passion can actually help to reproduce a lot of the kinds of socioeconomic inequalities we see that students enter college with. The second part of the difficulty is, what does it mean that we are willing to show up for a job and maybe willing to sacrifice good pay or control over our hours or working 80 or 90 hours a week because we're doing work that we love? And one of the things I find is that people are willing to sacrifice a whole lot for jobs that they have some kind of personal connection to. But on the flip side of that, employers not only like people who are passionate about their work, but often will explicitly exploit that, try to find people that will be passionate about their work because they believe they won't have to pay them as much.
Yeah, let's follow up on that point. There have been exposés about things like the video game industry lately, Hollywood special effects companies where people come in with a passion to do those things. Can you talk about how that plays out when employers might want to exploit that passion?
Absolutely. So that can happen in a couple of ways. One is exploiting the expectation that people will take on additional responsibilities and burdens without asking for much in return. And if an employer has people who are really passionate about their work, it means that they might not have to deal with that kind of pushback or requesting of additional resources or more control over their schedule. But then it also means that people, when they're trying to figure out how to navigate the requests for additional resources, can sometimes get stymied. So, for example, a few years ago when we saw a streak of teacher strikes, one of the things that was pushing back against the claims that teachers were making for the need for more support and more pay was that people would say to teachers, well, you chose teaching because you're passionate about it. And so therefore you shouldn't want or need to ask for more money. So it takes away the kind of negotiation power that people have. Even if they're passionate about their work, they should still be able to ask for things like raises.
So for an individual in this situation? They've got a job. They felt passionate about coming into it. They realize they're, you know, overworked. They're hustling all the time, not really getting compensated. Now, if that person came to you and sought out job advice, what kind of things might you point them toward?
That's a really good question. So first and foremost, I would say to them, make sure that you are finding space in your life for things outside of your work that you're passionate about. The paid labor force was not designed to support us in our search for self-fulfillment and self-expression, right? It's structured to be able to advance the needs and the goals of the people who sort of own the businesses that we work for or run the organizations that we work for. And so we have to make sure to protect ourselves and our sense of identity and meaning in the instance that our job goes away or we get reassigned or even fired. And so one of the most important things is how can we find things that we love that are completely unattached to the work that we do. And for people who are busy professionals, it actually takes work to find time outside of work for things that you're in that inspire you and that you're excited about. But that's a really important piece to have a more holistic sense of personal identity that's outside of one's paid work. Another task is how can we shrink the footprint of work in our lives? And that can be on the basis of how many hours per week we're working, or even how often we're on. We're checking our smartphones, we're checking our Slack channels for communication from our coworkers. How can we make room in our lives for just ourselves outside of the context of work? And the final thing I'll say is we have to make sure that we don't inadvertently pressure the young people in our lives or the people who are making decisions about their own career paths to say to them that the best way and really the only way to make a career decision is to follow your passion and find work that you love. There's all kinds of ways in our lives to have work that we enjoy, that we don't hate going into work for. That can mean having colleagues that we like to work with. That can be liking the organization that we work for, even if we're not necessarily totally passionate about the particular tasks we do in our job. And another way is to have a job where we have pretty predictable hours and that we can confine the footprint of that work in a kind of confined space. And so the people in our lives that are trying to make that decision, make sure that we approach their decision-making from a more holistic way rather than a passion is the only way kind of approach.
Talking to Aaron Sack, sociologist at the University of Michigan, author of the book, The Trouble with Passion, How Searching for Fulfillment at Work Fosters Inequality. Aaron, I want to go back to the first point now, the inequality thing. I can imagine, like, there's a lot of jobs out there where you either have to expect to make no money for a long time, maybe in the arts before you make it, or you are expected to do unpaid internships. I think media is a big one on that. Do you see structural fixes on that to make sure that people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds have a shot at that kind of thing?
Yes, some of that comes down to what academic institutions themselves are doing. One of the biggest burdens that students are facing when they leave college, of course, is student loan debt. And so not having such an intense burden of student loan debt can certainly help students from low-income families or who are first generation to even the playing field. Another thing is that schools can either pressure organizations to provide paid internships for those students who the organizations that want to recruit students to work for them, or in absence of that, provide fellowships or scholarships for students who want to intern at a place that is beneficial for them career wise, but they might otherwise need to be able to work a job that would pay something to be able to help pay their bills and pay tuition and pay for books down the line. And then more broadly, encouraging both students and those in the communities to understand that the reason that people are interested in finding jobs they're passionate about to begin with is because the labor force is really precarious and because we're expected to work for so many hours, most professionals are. And so thinking and promoting collective solutions that not only help the experiences of those who might be passionate about their work, but also the experiences of people who work in jobs that hold little ability for people being passionate about their work can help lift all boats, as the saying goes.
All right. A 1 minute drill here, Aaron. Suppose you're talking to a high school senior incoming this year. Leave them with a message as they look ahead to the job world.
Make sure to, as I say in my book, diversify your meaning-making portfolio, that the role that you have in your job is only one aspect of who you are as a person and should be only one place where you're nurturing a sense of self-expression and identity.
Aaron, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Aaron Seck is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Michigan. She talked to us about her book. It's called The Trouble with Passion, How Searching for Fulfillment at Work Fosters Inequality. Interested in hearing from you. Did you follow your passion at some point in your career? How did it work out? Was it a good idea or a mistake? Did you ever have a job where you loved the idea of it coming in, but realized you were just overworked and undercompensated with the expectation that, hey, you love it, so take what you get? You can let us know. Share your story. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. And do you give this advice to young people yourself? Follow your passion? Yes or no? Email ideas@wpr.org. A lot of people quit their jobs during the pandemic. And for people who got new jobs, the competitive labor market meant a lot of them came back with a bigger paycheck. In some cases, that created pay gaps between new hires and more senior workers at the same organization who never left their jobs. Our next guest says some companies are taking steps to even out those gaps in pay. Others are hoping it just kind of goes under the radar. You could join in at 800-642-1234. We want to hear your job history over the last couple of years. Did you seek a new job? Did you leave a job behind? Did you stay with the same kind of profession or start something totally new? Were you able to get more money by leaving? Or if you stayed instead of going, how did things work out for you? Call 800-642-1234. If you're in the business of hiring people, what are things like? Easy? Difficult? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Aki Ito is a senior correspondent at Business Insider. She covers the economy, the labor market, and the workplace. Aki, welcome back.
Hi, great to be with you.
Well, can you talk about the kind of pay disparities between the movers and the stayers? You wrote about this, it's been a couple few months now, earlier this summer.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, basically what's happening is that the job market was so hot over this past year and a half, that companies had to give out these crazy salaries in order to attract new candidates to their companies. And as a result, that created this really deep divide between the people who are just joining the company and people who've been around for years. There's one company called Labor IQ. They're a compensation data provider that estimated that this gap is about 7% right now, which is quite large. I mean, that's, you know, on the order of tens of thousands of dollars for certain positions. And that gap is even higher in certain tech roles, as large as 20%.
Now, I've been in the position, you know, when I see an ad from my phone provider, cable provider, they're offering this great deal for new customers. And I think, well, wait, what about me? Are we getting a sense that these employees who are staying and seeing these other people get sweet deals, is there like resentment out there in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what about me is exactly what a lot of employees are thinking. You know, these employees who've been around for years, they stuck around through the good times and the bad. They've showed a tremendous amount of loyalty to their employers. And what do they get in response to that? They're actually getting underpaid compared to the people who are just joining the company.
Have you seen companies try to account for that and say, hey, maybe it'll be cheaper to keep people?
Well, I think the smart companies are. They have realized that it's better to just give everybody an around-the-board raise than it is to, you know, lose everybody and then have to recruit new employees all over again. That's an incredibly expensive process. But even if, you know, that's a long-term cheaper solution, obviously companies have very tight budgets right now. They might not be able to afford that. And so they're trying other things to try to retain their existing employees as well.
Yeah. What other kind of strategies?
I think some are like improving the benefits that they're giving employees. Some are giving more generous work from home privileges. Others might be giving not, you know, necessarily a raise of the base salary, but a one-time bonus. I've seen a lot of that.
Talking to Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Business Insider, looking at the great resignation during the pandemic. A lot of people switched jobs there. And what happens with pay? And do we have new people at a place getting paid more than the ones who stuck around? A lot of different stuff going on here. You can join in with maybe your own story if you've switched jobs along the way. 800-642-1234. If you're an employer, what have things been like trying to lure recruits, try to keep the people you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Christine is with us in Wauwatosa. Christine, hi.
Hey, hi. So I just wanted to put my 2 cents worth in. I was a substitute teacher during the pandemic. And of course, once everything went virtual, there was no need for substitute teachers in our school district. So I took a job at Amazon, and I ended up actually enjoying my job. I didn't like the hours that, you know, but it was something to do and to help the family income, and that's it. Of course, once school started back up, I couldn't do both, so I had to make a choice, and I chose to go back working for the school district, and that's it.
Christine, thanks for sharing that. Aki, I think when it comes to hiring people, as in so many things, a lot of employers are competing with Amazon in particular and their warehouse jobs that had a boost during the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear this in every industry, you know, from hospitals. They have a huge shortage of nurses and other professionals because in some cases, these Amazon warehouses pay more than these hospitals. I've certainly heard about it with teachers. I've heard about it in restaurants and in hotels. Absolutely. I mean, Amazon is hoovering everybody up. And as a result, the, you know, entire economy is having to compete with that if they can by offering higher wages as well.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Maggie joins us next in Madison. Maggie, hello.
Hey. So I was just curious because I feel like I see a lot of stores closing early because of not having enough employees. There's all of these shortages. But my understanding is that unemployment is also at an all-time low. So how does that like math work out? If everyone is working, but we have all of these open positions, kind of what causes that gap?
Right. So unemployment is like, basically, I think people call it a labor shortage in some sectors, Aki. Low unemployment, lots of openings, not enough people to apply for those jobs in some cases.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the big mysteries of our time. Economists have been puzzling over this for the last 2 years, and I don't think anyone has quite figured out why. There's certainly some factors that relate to COVID. Some parents dropped out of the workforce and they feel like they're not ready to come back yet just because their childcare situation isn't totally steady with, you know, these new variants still floating around. In other cases, a lot of older workers retired. And so that reduces the number of people who are available to work as well. But yeah, certainly there is still a huge labor shortage right now. That's one of the reasons why the unemployment rate is so low. And it's because of the shortage that the labor market is so hot as a result. You know, all these companies are competing for a very small pool of available workers.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Aki, you also wrote about where people are working, remote work, and an interesting trend. Some of the high cost of living cities, you know, San Francisco, other places like that, you know, usually you get paid more if you work there because you got to pay more to live there. You found that some companies who are paying people to work remotely are paying them more, and you name drop cities, including Milwaukee. What's going on?
Yeah, so basically, because of the widespread availability of remote positions, companies can now recruit employees not just in the big cities at their base, let's say San Francisco or New York City, but also from all across the country. And that means that there are a lot more employers competing for employees in cities like Milwaukee compared to before. And as a result, the employees in Milwaukee are commanding a much higher salary than they used to. Milwaukee is actually one of the cities where we've seen the biggest salary increases for white-collar professionals across the country. It was number three in the country, a 20% increase since 2019, which is incredible.
We're talking to Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Business Insider, who covers the economy, labor market, and workplaces. She's with us today to talk about a gap in pay between new hires and veteran employees that's cropped up in many companies during the Great Resignation and other issues related to the job market these days. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. At your workplace, have you seen this, having to pay more to bring new people in? If you're one of the people who's already there, are you worried that the new folks are getting paid more than you are? Have you switched jobs or made a point of staying put over the course of the pandemic if you hire people? Can you talk about the difficulties you're facing bringing staff on board, or have you found a solution? You're doing fine. You're finding the people you need. Either way, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about the pandemic workplace, the Great Resignation, how there's some pay disparities in places between new recruits and senior employees who've been around a company longer. Aki Ito is with us from Business Insider. Still time for your call, your story, maybe your experience at 800-642-1234. Did you change jobs? Did you change professions? Did you get more money, or are you just happier in the new place? Have you stuck with the place you're in? If you hire people, are you finding people? And what do you think of all this? Are you looking for work and having trouble finding it? That story's out there too. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Jack is with us in Green Bay. Jack, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
The reason I'm calling, thanks for taking my call. I have some friends and relatives who went back to school during the pandemic, got their associate degrees in business, and would apply for jobs around the area in Green Bay, get interviews, and then the employer didn't even have the courtesy of calling them to say they didn't get the position, or if they didn't get the position, why they didn't get the position. Their employers have been just terrible in following up with letting applicants know that they're not getting the job or what the reason is. And if they call back to the employer won't take their call.
Jack, thanks a lot for sharing that. Aki, this isn't the first time I've heard things like that. And we hear about potential employees ghosting potential employers. Jack says sometimes going the other way too.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this has been the case for a long time. HR professionals call this the candidate experience, how the interviewing process feels on the candidate side. And I think that's come back to haunt certain companies during the Great Resignation, when the labor market has been so hot, because these companies that mistreated candidates in the past, you know, new candidates don't want to go work for them anymore. I heard a lot of stories over this past year where companies were shortening the interviewing process. I'm sure everyone has heard of those companies that, you know, make you interview 10 different times and just so time consuming and labor intensive. A lot of companies try to shorten that process, make it easier for candidates as part of one way that they were trying to woo more workers to come work for them.
Jack, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Pat joins us next in Milwaukee. Pat, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about my wife and I are a small business, a restaurant in the neighborhood of River West. And, you know, the getting through COVID was crazy. We never worked so hard to lose money. But, you know, there was a future that if we keep working will, you know, will be ready for business when COVID clears up. Anyways, the hiring issue, or like, you know, why people seem to be taking more time to think about what you're doing. At first, it was frustrating, and maybe it still is, I guess. But I realized it gave people a chance, you know, like hopping off this crazy treadmill, especially Americans seem to be on with working and working, and figuring out what they're going to dedicate their time to. Is it what's worth it? And how? And we need more money. And we're a small business. We've always been, for pre-owning a business, behind a $15 minimum at the start, and then let's, you know, go from there. So it was. I think it's been a, you know, it's a good thing. It's kind of an odd moment that everyone was given.
Pat, thanks a lot for sharing that. That's interesting, Aki. Pat, you know, in some cases it makes it harder to hire people, but he's glad that people are taking time to think about what they want to do with their careers. Is that something you think a lot of people are doing?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why the national quit rate has been so high over this past year. It's why we're all calling it the Great Resignation. You know, it's not just because the labor market is hot and as a result, there are more opportunities to switch jobs. It's also because the pandemic gave people time to think and really consider what they want to do with the rest of their lives. Some of that was about their personal lives, but some of that was also about their work. And I think we are now starting to see the people who took some time off, who took that time to really, you know, figure out what they want to do in the future, start to, you know, actually start those new jobs. Maybe they went back to school or maybe they started a whole new career. And I think that's really exciting.
Pat, thanks a lot for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Talking to Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Business Insider, looking at the latest from the Great Resignation, what's happening at workplaces around the country. Are people still switching jobs? Are you? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let us know if you stayed or went from the job you had, say, coming into 2020. Let us know what it's like to try to hire people in 2022. Call 800-642-1234. Trisha from Menominee shared a story. Called in to say she worked for the Department of Corrections for 17 years, quit during the pandemic, started working in a warehouse and loves it, makes more money and has a lot less stress. You could share your story at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Aki, now here we are, summer of 2022. Is there a sense that there's still that that premium for switching jobs? You recently looked, I think, in particular at the tech industry to see if people are still making bank by leaving and signing on somewhere else.
I think there definitely is. When you look at all of the labor market data, it's very clear that the job market is still incredibly hot. But it does feel like we're coming to a plateau at this point. The level of job openings has stopped increasing. The share of people who are quitting their jobs, that's leveled out as well. So we probably are headed for some kind of slowdown over the next few months. That is what some of the broader indicators suggest. At the same time, you know, with inflation, for example, workers are still asking for big raises, and often they're getting them. And the best way to get a raise is still to switch to a new job.
And in the tech industry in particular, I mean, sometimes we hear some big name companies are saying, okay, we're going to stop hiring people. Some of them, in some cases, like some of the big name companies you heard of, cutting some jobs. You dug deeper into the technology industry. Is this an across the board dial back of jobs in technology?
It so far doesn't seem to be. I think it's still relatively limited to a small portion of employers. There's certainly a lot of employers that have implemented hiring freezes or have actually gone ahead and done a round of layoffs. But there are plenty of other employers, too, that are using this opportunity to hire the workers that they couldn't when the labor market was so hot over this past year that they just couldn't attract enough new candidates. So I think it's going both ways. That said, if there's any sector in the economy that is probably experiencing a job market slowdown, it probably would be in tech, just because that's the industry where we're seeing the biggest slowdowns in corporate earnings. And that's putting pressure on companies to really try to cut down on costs.
Let's bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. Joe is with us now in Star Lake. Joe, hi.
Yeah, hi. I think it's a great program. I've thought a lot about this Great Resignation. I read a book some years ago. In fact, I sent it to my son who was doing his doctorate. It was called Shop Class as Soul Craft. I don't know if you knew it. It was kind of a book that got a real buzz when it came out. Mm-hmm. A fellow who had gotten his doctorate at the University of Chicago, went to a think tank, supposedly the perfect job, realized he was totally unhappy. And he wound up opening a motorcycle repair business in Richmond. And he just really started looking at how we direct so many young people into these kinds of, managerial kind of roles or high tech, and that the trades themselves can be a very satisfying life and also financially a good life anymore because they're in such high demand. And I think that some of the resignation of the young people I know, my kids' age, that are in their late 20s and 30s, a lot of it is they're just walking away from jobs that are just boring as can be. And it's not just the money. You know, they're looking for something that has an inherent satisfaction. And you build or fix something, and particularly for men, but I think probably for women, it's just a more satisfying experience.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, that rung a bell. I looked in our archives. Matthew Crawford's the author of that book. He was on Central Time back in 2015, a few years back. But you can check that out in our archives. Again, that idea, Aki, of some people, Joe says people leaving their jobs because they're not satisfying. They're boring, he says, and looking for something more fulfilling. Is that going on? Is that something you think might continue if so?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting trend. I mean, we spend so much of our lives at work, whether we do it from home or whether we're in the office. So we might as well do something that we enjoy if we can afford that. I think one of the other interesting trends, though, over these past 2.5 years is that some people are deciding that they don't need to love their jobs as well. You might have heard of the term hustle culture, and some people are deciding that, they don't necessarily need to be doing something that, that they're totally passionate about in order to earn a living. So I think it goes both ways. Some people are looking for jobs that are more fulfilling, and other people are trying to find fulfillment outside of work altogether.
Thanks again for that call. And just less than a minute now, Aki, I know you always are watching for the next trend in work. What are you watching for next?
Oh, so much. I mean, I think that the big thing right now is how the labor market shapes up over these next few months with the economic slowdown, how big, if there will be a recession, and if there will be a recession, how big it'll be, how much it'll affect people's job prospects. That's probably the biggest story I'm going to be following.
Aki, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Business Insider, where she covers the economy, the labor market, and workplaces. She was with us today to talk about pay disparities between people who've gotten new jobs during the Great Resignation and the workers who've decided to stay put, and other big issues going on in American workplaces now. You can still share your story of staying in a job, leaving a job, hiring people for jobs. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page what's going on in your workplace.